from HockeyAbstract.com, and of course the author of Stat Shot, which is available in all fine bookstores and available online. It would make a fantastic Christmas gift for that hockey fan in your family, or even if they're not family, if they're just friends, whoever you're buying gifts for. If they're a hockey fan, why couldn't they use a book? Mr. Volman, we've come at a great time, because there's nothing better than history and breaking history or achieving history, and that's what's happened this week. Jaromír Jágr with 3 assists in a win by the Panthers over the Buffalo Sabres has tied Marc Messier for second all-time in points in the National Hockey League. And quite honestly, I didn't know if that was something we were ever going to see. But here we are. And you just happened to pen an article on Marc Messier and Jaromír Jágr, and I find some of your findings very intriguing.
Yeah, one of the real privileges, I must say, in writing for NHL.com is the ability and the opportunity to cover events like these and to write an article in a truly historic moment. And then to do something like to compare two superheroes like Jaromír Jágr and Marc Messier. And it's not easy to do because, you know, their careers did overlap for 11 years. But before that, Messier was playing in the high-scoring 80s. And, of course, Jágr spent a lot of his career either in Europe or if he was in the NHL, he was in a much lower-scoring era. So it wasn't easy to make those comparisons, but that's what I tried to do for NHL.com this week.
How do you do that? How do you compare players from different eras?
Well, the two techniques I used here, one of them was dividing a player's point totals by the average number of goals per game that season, and then multiplying it by the modern-day average, which is about 5.5 goals per game. So just as an example, Marc Messier's best season was 127 points, but if you divide that by, you know, the goals per game in the high-scoring 80s, multiplied by today's 5.5, it's only the equivalent of a 96-point season. I mean, still good, but if you take Jágr, when he scored 129 points, a couple points more than Messier, that works out to 133 today. So there really is a big difference. And the other technique is just, we've talked about this on the show before, translating data from the KHL or from the Czech League to the NHL by looking at sort of how many points players retain when they make those moves. And so using those two techniques, I was able to estimate that Jágr, you know, probably would have outscored Messier by over 600 points if they played in the same era and exclusively in the NHL.
Robbie and I were talking about this yesterday. It was kind of one of our ongoing topics. You know, you talk about Jágr compared to Messier. Where does Jágr fit for you all time, though? He's number 3 all time on the scoring list, but we were talking about the Mount Rushmore conversation and who would you have as, you know, the 4 or 5 greats of the game. Would Jágr be in that mix on that list for you?
If we're talking only about scoring, then absolutely. I mean, the only superior scorer, I think, in NHL history, the more accomplished, of course, is the untouchable Wayne Gretzky. But if we're talking about more than just scoring, then the debate gets a little bit trickier, because even the debate between Jágr and Messier gets trickier, because we know Messier was very, very strong defensively. He's second all-time in shorthanded points. We know how tough he was. We know about his leadership. We know about his grit. We know he won 6 Stanley Cups, including the Conn Smythe when the Oilers won their first cup in 84. So, you know, there's no comparison there, but unfortunately the number is a lot harder to record when you're looking at grit and hustle and stuff like that. So if I had a Mount Rushmore of hockey legends, I'd have Gretzky, I'd have Orr, I'd have Howe. I wouldn't necessarily put Jágr on that. But if we're talking about pure scoring, then yes, absolutely yes, he'd be right next to Wayne.
And what is really incredible is what Jágr's been able to do in terms of his longevity. And I mean, Marc Messier was right there with him in terms of his longevity, but pretty unprecedented for Jágr to be doing what he's doing and over the last couple of years. I mean, we talked about this a number of times. For him to still be playing at a high level well into his 40s, this is not only is the scoring record and him being number 2 all-time impressive, but the fact that the age he's doing this is pretty remarkable too.
Yeah, and you say unprecedented, almost unprecedented. If it weren't for Gordie Howe, you would just say unprecedented, because Gordie Howe is really the only precedent to this sort of thing. And so Jágr's number 2. So it's getting to the point now where I don't know if we'll necessarily see this again, because I think we're already seeing the NHL getting younger and younger, and speed and youth, you know, a greater premium being placed on that. This is really the year of the rookie, where so many teams are turning to young players and rookie players. you know, it could be a long time before we see someone able to perform in their 40s like Jágr today, or like Gordie Howe and Mark Messier, earlier.
And I don't want to rain on anybody's parade, and that's not the intent. I mean, this is historical, and he deserves the accolades, but I'm just curious about Jarmer's season to date this year, because you are dealing with an older player, and I remember Timo Salani had a terrific season, and the next season he just kind of fell off the face of the earth, and that was it for him. How about this season for Jágr? You look at it in comparison, how is it shaping up?
Well, I don't think he's fallen off. He's on a decline. I think that's surely the case. But I know what you're pointing at is players that they just cross that threshold and they just lose that half step, and that half step makes the difference between them being able to make a play and just not being able to do it. And every player hits that point at some point in their careers. And a lot of legends will actually retire before they hit that point. Like when Niklas Lidström retired, for example, when he was 41, he was still arguably one of the best defensemen in the NHL. But he felt that he was probably only a year or two removed from that point. But with Jágr, who knows? He might actually play until he actually loses that step and can no longer perform the way he does. But he still is. I mean, he can still do it.
He's Rob Volman from HockeyAbstract.com. He's our guest down the South Street Burger Guest Hotline. He joins us every Thursday at this time as we take a look at some of the stories from around the analytics world and the hockey world. And I want to stop on another favorite topic of mine, and that's goalies. You also wrote for NHL.com the calendar year of 2016, the top five goalies for 2016. I have not read it. I am going to take a wild stab in the dark and say Devan Dubnyk's in it.
Devan Dubnyk. And remember, this is for the entire calendar year. So it includes the tail end of last season. It includes the playoffs in most cases, and it includes the first part of this season so far. And in all three cases, Dubnyk did very well. In fact, of course, I believe he leads the league in save percentage, of those that played at least 30 games in the calendar year. And I had him, surprisingly, only third. I actually had two goalies above him.
So who made the list, Rob?
Do you want to take a shot at who's higher?
Carey Price was hurt for most of the year, so that would take him out of the running, right?
Yeah, he's out. He didn't even play the 30 games, yeah.
What about Corey Crawford?
Well, I squeezed Corey Crawford into fifth, and because he was actually, a second or third in save percentage. He might have wound up being higher, but he had two injuries this season, his current one and, of course, his emergency appendectomy recently. He also had an injury, it was in March. If it weren't for those injuries, or if Chicago had done a bit better in the playoffs, he probably could have bubbled higher. So I had him fifth. Just to take away the suspense here, a lot of people, they guess Braden Holtby, but they don't realize that, Holtby was, his save percentage was like .935 or something in the 2015 portion of last year, but .911. Well below average in the 2016 portion. He was strong in the playoffs. He's been strong here, and that's why I have him fourth. But the top two positions are Martin Jones and Matt Murray, and I feel very confident about that because Martin Jones, he led in virtually every statistical category, games played, wins, shots, saves, shutouts. And Matt Murray, he played a little bit less than Jones, but, was overall right at the top in save percentage. And also, he never loses in the regular season or in the playoffs. I know that's more of a team stat, but you've got to give Matt Murray some credit for, delivering a quality start each and every game, even when you're in the high-pressure playoffs.
It's funny. You bring up Jones, and I go, of course, Martin Jones. Is Martin Jones not guy, and this has nothing to do with anything other than very, for some reason, forgettable? He shouldn't be. He's to Rob's work, he's been one of the best, but he's not necessarily a guy to this point, Rob, that jumps out at you.
Yeah, I think most of the goalies on this list get overlooked, with the exception perhaps of Holtby. They all get overlooked. Yeah. Martin Jones, he was exceptional even before he came to the NHL, winning awards in the juniors. And then he came to the NHL, he was really strong as the backup to the Kings. And, of course, he's been, lights out in San Jose this entire time, getting that franchise into the Stanley Cup for the first time in franchise history. Matt Murray was often overlooked. He was a monster in the AHL. 2015 was just as good as 2016. He set up the shutout record in the AHL and the longest shutout streak, and he swept all the awards. And it's possible Matt Murray this year might become the youngest winner of the Vezina since Jim Carrey about 20 years ago. So, I think Matt Murray's another player that really gets overlooked.
Rob, and one goalie that didn't make that list is Jonathan Quick. A big part of that didn't have a, you know, hasn't been necessarily outstanding the last couple of years, and also has missed a good chunk of the latter half of 2016 because of injury. But your piece on ESPN.com this week is focusing in on the LA Kings and why this team might be one to be reckoned with come the second half of the season, and Quick's impending return is just one of the reasons why.
Yeah, you're making my week look a lot busier than it was. But yeah, I also penned a piece about why the Kings are really, I think, the team to watch going into 2017 in the Pacific Division. I think they could even win the Pacific Division. Quick is one of the reasons. He'll be back in mid-February. But I think the big reason is, you know, the shot-based metrics. You know, the Kings have led or been at least number two in shot-based metrics for six straight seasons. And I've said, as I said on the show, these shot-based metrics, it's not just about puck possession. It's not just that the Kings get the puck and they retain possession of the puck, but they also advance it up the ice into the attacking zone and convert that advantage into a scoring chance. And people say, you know, those numbers can be deceiving because teams can take a lot of low-quality shots. And I'm like, how many low-quality shots are there really? Because even from the point, the shot can be screened, it can be deflected, it can create a rebound, it can be off the rush or a cross-ice pass. And are there really players in the NHL today? There's a few, but are there really a lot of players in the NHL today that aren't dangerous from almost anywhere in the attacking zone? So I think this is overblown. There aren't very many low-quality shots. When you're putting that puck on the net, it's usually a pretty good scoring chance.
Now, the Kings being, as you mentioned, the shot-based metrics, the possession rate, top number one or number two for six consecutive seasons. It's amazing how much a coach can have an impact in something like this. Why have the Kings under Daryl Sutter been able to be so consistent in that regard?
Well, I'm glad you brought it up because their success pretty much coincides with the arrival of Daryl Sutter. With the exception of 2014-15 and, of course, that split season when he first came to the Flames, this is a man who just never misses the playoffs at any level, as a player, as a coach, never misses the playoffs. And, you know, he's coached for 16 years, and I've got a coaching metric that measures how a team does relative to expectations. And 13 out of those 16 seasons, his teams did better than expected. You know, we've calculated the impact to be about 4.2 points per season. Every season he adds to his team. And if you add it all up, that makes him the seventh most productive coach all time in the regular season. So Sutter, I think a lot of people don't realize just the impact he's had in Los Angeles and how it would be a much different story if they had someone else behind the bench.
Good stuff, Rob. As always, once again, we want to remind everybody that if you're looking for that last-minute Christmas gift, StatShot is available in stores, but also online. Any other deals that we need to know about?
No, that's the main one, just StatShot. And, you know, there was a glitch where U.S. customers couldn't buy it for a few days last week. And, you know, that also screwed up the bestseller list, so I'm not up there. I still think Wayne Gretzky was behind it. He felt me breathing down on his book for number one. He arranged the glitch. I have no proof, but what else could it be, Rob? Had to be Gretzky.
You know, when things go bad around here, we always blame Gretzky. Rob, yeah. Merry Christmas to you. Thanks for doing this. We will catch up to you next week, but enjoyed the visit. Enjoy the holidays.
Yeah, thanks. Same to you and to all your listeners.